Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep broadcasting. Go to 3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast. G'day and welcome to Stick Together, Australia's only national radio show dedicated to workplace and social justice issues. Stick Together is produced in the studios at 3CR Community Radio in Melbourne, and we're broadcast nationally via the Community Radio Network. My name's Elena McMaster. Stick with us for the next half hour as we find out how the Australian government's super freeze will affect nurses and midwives, and we get an update from Victorian paramedics.
The mining tax is gone, and the unsustainable spending associated with the mining tax is also gone. We have completely delivered on our pre-election commitments.
So I'm sure most Australians will like the fact that they'll be able to bargain stronger for wages, they'll be able to get more access than they otherwise would have had to get.
That the way the government's been trying to sell this is that somehow employers are going to give you the money now so that you can have the money in your pockets now is absolutely not going to happen.
The mining tax has finally been buried. The tax on the massive profits of mining companies was repealed under a deal between the Abbott government and mining billionaire Clive Palmer's Palmer United Party. The dirty deal passed in the Senate on the 2nd of September, and it means that compulsory superannuation contributions are frozen at 9.5%. Superannuation contributions were scheduled to increase to 12% by 2019. Palmer United Party leader Clive Palmer and Prime Minister Tony Abbott have both said that workers will be better off with the money going into their pockets now as wage increases. The idea that bosses will automatically pass on savings in compulsory superannuation contributions to workers in their wages seems pretty far-fetched. The Secretary of the Australian Council of Trade Unions, Jed Carney, has said that unions will fight to claw back the lost super through wage increases. I spoke with Annie Butler, Assistant Secretary of the Australian Nursing and Midwifery Federation, about these issues. Okay, firstly, Annie, can you just please explain broadly how the government's super freeze will impact on your members, on nurses and midwives?
Yeah, well, we're very concerned about the impact of the freeze for the next 3 years. And our concern is that who knows how long that could last as well. So what that's going to do is have an impact on our members' retirement incomes. And we think that that actually will have continue to have an impact on nurses and midwives, possibly for years to come. It's probably very well known that the major portion of the nursing and midwifery workforce is already in their 40s and 50s, and so they're looking at retirement in the next decade. And we've calculated that if you look at the proposed changes the government's been talking about in pension indexation, the freeze in the super guarantee could actually result in a 25% reduction in retirement incomes for someone who's aged 45 today on average earnings.
So nursing is still a largely feminised workforce, although, of course, there are increasing men joining the nursing workforce. So can you just talk a little about how this impacts, given that the workforce is largely feminised and women on average get a super payout, I think this is 2007 figures, so it may have changed a little since then. That's only a third of the amount that men on average will receive. So how does the fact that nursing's a feminised workforce kind of impact?
Of course, well, this is something we're extremely concerned about because it continues to be strongly female-dominated, both nursing and midwifery, and we're looking at almost 91% of the workforce is female. Now, we know already women are underannuated. Women's lives tend to be, they're having interruptions to paid employment because of, you know, having children, all those sorts of things. So it diminishes their capacity to build up their retirement savings in the first place. We know that women's incomes tend to be lower, but while we're looking at that, women tend to live longer than men, and so they're going to have to be managing to support themselves through their retirement longer on less income. When we look at so we've got just over 240,000 members now, and so that's got a range of nurses and midwives, and they're at a registered nurse level, an enrolled nurse, and what we call an assistant in nursing level. So if we look at the population now who's about around that 45 to 50 mark, we could say that the average annual salary for a registered nurse across the country is around 76,000. But if we look at our AIN, who's working in the aged care sector, who's around the same age, so probably set to retire within the next decade, the average income for that worker is just over $41,000. So to take away from them the potential to build up their retirement savings a little is going to have a really quite a devastating impact.
So Annie, it sounds as though in terms of addressing economic security for women in retirement so that they aren't struggling to make ends meet, there's kind of a range of policy changes necessary beyond ensuring that super contributions don't get frozen or decreased. Can you comment on that at all in terms of your members?
Well, that's right. What we would like to see is the super guarantee restored, of course, and give people a chance to try and build their retirement savings better. Because one thing I can tell you absolutely confidently is that the way the government's been trying to sell this, in that somehow employers are going to give you the money now so that you can have the money in your pockets now, is absolutely not going to happen. Now, there's been some research done by actual super funds who have said that approximately 70% of employers aren't going to pass on any savings in increased wages. And we have an example in New South Wales where the government, when the super went from the contribution for employers went from 9% to 9.5%, the New South Wales government took that increase in super out of public sector wages. So we have an example where it's not going to happen. So we know that's not going to happen. So what we want to see is the super guarantee restored. What we also want to see is other protections that need to be put back in place, such as, you know, disability pensions, workers' compensation schemes, which have been under attack from state governments over the last few years. And because they provide protections for working people, and particularly as the risks increase as people are working longer and they're getting older. Now, one of the things as well with our particular workforce is that these people, when we're looking at around the 50, 55-year-old mark, that these people have been working for 30 or so years. Now, 30 years ago, there weren't the same protections in terms of OHS that there are now. So nurses have a surprisingly high rate of workplace injury, particularly back injuries, because of the nature of the work that they have to do. So we need to have mechanisms and supports that can support these people, one, if they have to leave the workforce a bit early because they have an injury, or they're trying to work on while having modified duties with an injury, or when they get to retire. So these are the sorts of things that would assist our workforce.
So, excuse me. So Annie, you mentioned that the government said that workers will receive the difference basically as wage increases, and you mentioned the unlikeliness of that. It's something that I've been a little puzzled by actually in the coverage of the super freeze, that this hasn't really been named for what it is, which is a pay cut to workers. And of course unions have said that they'll be fighting to win that difference back in pay increases. I was wondering if you can comment on the difficulty of doing that in, for instance, Victoria, where there's a 2.5% wages policy, and how difficult it will be for unions to actually try and negotiate a wage increase to try and account for that, the super that's been taken from workers.
Yeah, exactly. I was just talking to some of our branch secretaries around the country about this last week, and it's not that we won't try, and it's not that we won't try hard, but it will be extremely difficult. Superannuation is the sort of thing that's quite hard to bargain around anyway. We know that the state governments around the country are pretty much capping wages. As you've just said, we've seen a cap on public sector wages around the country, and we've now just in Tasmania, the government is trying to have an entire wage freeze, and that's not even to allow increments for public sector workers. And we have the, as I mentioned earlier, a specific example of when the state government was forced to have an increase in super, they extracted it from the wage increase. So even though it was capped here at 2.5%, they're only paying 2.27 because they're forcing employees to pay their own super increase, which is not the intention of how superannuation schemes are meant to work. So that's in the public sector, which is generally the easiest for us, not that it's easy, but the easiest for us to actually negotiate and bargain in. In aged care environments, this is going to be extremely difficult for us to try and build these, one, to build better super, or two, to try and get wage increases to compensate into agreements for our workers in those sectors.
I was just wondering if you have anything to say about the deal that was done between the Palmer United Party and the Abbott government, which resulted in the super freeze, which was, of course, agreeing to support the repeal of the mining tax. How does it feel to have, super money taken off workers so that a corporate tax can be ditched?
Look, it's extremely disappointing to us. And, you know, I don't know if you saw our press release last week, but, you know, it's just done by a backroom deal with Clive Palmer, you know, for what it seems to us, just for the benefits of, you know, big mining companies and other big business. So we are extremely disappointed in that. One thing we want to say, though, is that we have to remember that it's the Abbott government who are making these decisions, and it's the Abbott government pushing forward these proposals. So while we're disappointed in the way that PUP has chosen to vote, it's still the Abbott government we want to hold accountable for this.
That was Annie Butler, the Assistant National Secretary of the Australian Nursing and Midwifery Federation. Annie was speaking about the impact of the super freeze on nurses and midwives once they retire.
You're listening to Stick Together, all about workers' rights and social justice.
Every week on the Community Radio Network.
And now to paramedics in Victoria, who've been in dispute with the state government over wages and conditions for more than 2 years. Here's what they were saying early on in the dispute.
Well, our base rate of pay is only $56,000 per year. And, you know, comparatively across Australia, we're by far the lowest paid. I'm pretty sure the smallest gap between us and any other state is Queensland, and they're about $8,000 ahead of us. You know, we're known as being by far the most, the highest trained and the highest performing ambulance service. We get the best cardiac arrest survival rate, best stroke treatment, but it just hasn't translated into the same wages and conditions that the other states have managed to get.
If you live anywhere in Victoria where there's an ambulance service, chances are you've probably seen the ambulances covered with messages for Premier Dennis Napthine and the Health Minister David Davis. Stick Together has been following the Victorian AMBOs in dispute for years as they attempt to bring their wages and conditions up to parity with other states. I spoke with Danny Hill. Last time I caught up with him, he was a paramedic and union delegate in outer metropolitan Melbourne. You just heard his description of wages and conditions back then in March 2013. He's now the Assistant Secretary of Ambulance Employees Australia in Victoria, and they're still fighting the same battle. To start with, Danny, can you give us a little bit of an overview of this dispute, the history of it, and how long it's been going on for?
Well, this dispute with the NAPSEAN government has been going on for over 2 years now. It was in April 2012 that we first submitted a log of claims to Ambulance Victoria and the government. And what we were seeking for that was seeking in that log of claims was pay parity with other Australian states, ambulance services in other Australian states. Victorian paramedics are the lowest paid paramedics in Australia. We're about $25,000 to $30,000 a year behind some of the other Australian ambulance services. So what we've been trying to do is to get our the wage rates for Victorian paramedics up to the level of about the other states. So we have been in a long-fought battle with the government. Sort of quite quickly in the dispute, we realised that the government weren't interested in sort of correcting that that wage gap. Instead, what they've been trying to do is offer Victorian paramedics a minimal pay rise in exchange for taking away a lot of very crucial and very significant working conditions from Victorian paramedics.
So, Danny, as I understand it, you've been in dispute with previous governments as well around a lot of the similar issues. Does the union have any ideas about why it's been so hard to shift Ambulance Victoria and successive state governments on these issues, which are about patient care as well as workplace rights for paramedics?
Absolutely. Yeah. Look, it's tough. Enterprise bargaining in the public sector is very hard, normally due to the fact that the government has their own wages policy, which is 2.5% wage rise per year, and anything other than that has to come from productivity. Now, their definition of productivity is where it gets complicated, because I'll give you an example of some of the productivity that Victorian paramedics have provided. Victorian paramedics now provide 12-lead ECG in field. Prior to that, any patient that was having a heart attack would have to go directly to the emergency department where a 12-lead ECG was done, a heart attack was diagnosed, and from there they go up to the cardiac cath lab where a stent is inserted and the heart attack, the blockage is cleared. Now Victorian paramedics can diagnose that that heart attack in field by doing a 12-lead ECG. They communicate that through to the hospital and say, we're coming in with a patient who's having a heart attack. They bypass the ED, the emergency department, and go directly up to the cardiac cath lab where a stent is inserted. And that saves a huge amount of time, because every minute that there's a heart attack, every minute that the heart muscle is deprived of oxygen, that is muscle area in the heart that dies. So literally time is muscle. Time is, every minute that a patient goes without oxygen to their heart muscle can determine whether they live or die or not. So by paramedics taking on 12-lead ECG, you're seeing a massive reduction in the mortality rate. People are surviving heart attacks. They're out of hospital sooner. They're off medication sooner. They're back in the workforce sooner. I mean, literally hundreds of millions of dollars in saving to the Victorian health system and the Victorian community. The government doesn't define that as productivity. They don't see that as productivity. They only see productivity as taking away your working conditions, taking away bankable dollars, such as taking away sick leave or taking away annual leave or accident makeup pay. So that's where some of the big sticking points are.
So there's not this holistic view of savings made across the health system that higher skills or paramedics taking on more of these tasks actually result in. So they're not seeing those as productivity gains.
No, that's right. That's exactly right. And that's what's a real shame to the Victorian community, because paramedics are prepared to look at any increase in their scope of practice, any increase in their skill set, and that, you know, which will benefit the Victorian community. Unfortunately, the government isn't interested in that. We've suggested things that we think may help with hospital ramping, may reduce the workload on paramedics and the strain on the health system. And government, they're not interested in talking about any of that. All they want to say is, well, you know, what conditions are you prepared to give us? What are you prepared to trade off in order to get a pay rise? So it's really robbing Peter to pay Paul. And it's really missing a great opportunity to see an improvement in the health system.
So, Danny, can you tell us about what working life is like for many of your members under the current conditions and the wages that they receive at the moment, how that impacts on them?
Yeah, sure. Well, for example, I was a paramedic when I started on road. When I started on road about 10 years ago, you would do a 14-hour night shift. And paramedics work 2 10-hour days and 2 14-hour nights. And on those night shifts, you would actually get some time back at the branch. You could grab a meal. You could have, you know, maybe an hour or two with your eyes closed. That doesn't happen anymore. Now you're just literally the second you clear one job, you're straight off to another job. The workload has increased that much and the demand has increased that much, but the resourcing hasn't kept pace with it. So paramedics are far busier than they ever were. They're burning out quicker. The paramedics are in the job for about 5 or 6 years now before they burn out. We have a very major issue with mental health issues and emotional and psychological health issues amongst some of our members, some of our paramedics, just because they're not getting the time. They're going to these, you know, these critical incidents, but they're not having the time to debrief with their colleagues and debrief with their partners, and that's having a big toll on them. It's having a big effect on them. But, I mean, at the same time, they still love their job. They're happy to do their job. They really enjoy it. It's a really rewarding job. And they certainly don't get into it for the big bucks. But what we're seeing at the moment is the cost of living rising. We're seeing, you know, a lot of stress on them in their home life and their financial circumstances. And some of them are struggling to keep pace with the bills. And we've even got paramedics who can't afford to live in the areas that they work in because of the... you know, the wages. I mean, I was talking to someone a while ago and they'd gotten a job as a tram conductor, and a tram conductor is paid about $20,000 a year more than a Victorian paramedic is paid. And not that they don't do a great job, they certainly do a great job, but surely the value of the work done by paramedics, you know, really needs to be recognised and taken into account in this current dispute.
So in the lead up to the Victorian election, what... I guess it's going to be a continuation of the Code Red campaign, but have you got other things planned to get the message out to the Victorian public when they go to the ballot box?
Well, look, we're not, you know, we're not specifically, you know, backing any party. That's for sure. You know, we have members from a very diverse group of, you know, political interests and political backgrounds. So, you know, we certainly wouldn't tell our members who to vote for, but I think it's fairly, you know, my reading of the workforce is it's fairly unanimous that things have gone backwards underneath the NAPSEN government. So you certainly see ambulances driving around with slogans written on the side of the truck in liquid chalk saying, "This November, vote to end the ambulance crisis." I mean, what we want is for people to think about, you know, the service provided by the public sector as far as ambulance, health, and certainly we've seen some of the other unions doing that as far as education. This election put education first. And that's the sort of message we want to see. We want people to think about the ambulance service and think about the ambulance issues that they've heard about in the media when they're at the ballot box. We've essentially turned our members loose on the public and on politicians and said, look, get out there and have the conversation. And you know, the more our members are out there talking to the public, talking to politicians and convincing people. I mean, paramedics, just like nurses and teachers and doctors and fireys and police, they hold a level of trust with the community. So by them getting out there and talking about the problems with the service that they provide to the community, I think that's a really powerful thing, and we certainly encourage our members to be involved in that. They've become quite good at that, and they've learnt that... you know, the biggest weapon they have and their biggest strength is by getting out there and talking publicly, talking to the media, you know, ringing up radio stations and having a chat. And they've become really, you know, in some cases, they've come to really enjoy it. And some of them have become media tarts a little bit, but that's okay. You know, they're getting the message across to the public, and that's a really important thing.
Yeah, I guess it's really great that they're able to talk about their jobs, because it's such an important job, and I think it's really good for people to hear about what that entails day by day, and yeah, what paramedics do with their time.
Absolutely, and you know, they don't need to hear it from their union spokesperson, they can tell the story themselves, and I think the public would rather hear it from the paramedics themselves talking about their job and talking about the work they do. They all talk about it with a level of passion. They love the job. And I think, most people in the community would have had some sort of experience with paramedics at some time, and they probably reflect on that hopefully when they hear paramedics talking on radio or read about them talking in the paper and think, well, you know, yeah, I trust paramedics. I'd want to hear what they've got to say. So it's great that they're using their voice and they're giving their opinion publicly.
That was Danny Hill, Assistant Secretary with the Victorian branch of Ambulance Employees Australia. If you want to find out more about their long-running campaign for better pay and conditions, you can visit the Code Red campaign page on Facebook, or you can go to the union website at aeavic.com.au. And that's all for Stick Together for this week. Thanks for listening in, as always, and thank you to our guests Danny Hill and Annie Butler. Stick Together is produced at 3CR Community Radio in Melbourne and broadcast nationally on the Community Radio Network. We are grateful for financial support received from the Community Broadcasting Foundation. If you miss the broadcast, you can listen to a streaming online or download the podcast at 3cr.org.au. You can contact the producers of the show at stick.together@hotmail.com or by giving us a call on 03-9419-8377. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. The theme music for Stick Together is Which Side Are You On? Performed by the Glitter Rats. My name's Elena McMaster. I'll catch you next time. Thanks for listening to a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. You can find us at 3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online.